The Partnership for Public Service, as we've reported earlier this week, has come up with a new set of civil service reform ideas. Together, they would modernize the decades-old general schedule system to better reflect the work of today's federal employees. John Palguda is the Vice President for Policy at the Partnership. He joins us now with more. John, good morning.
Good morning, Tom and Emily.
All right, so this has been kicking around, the idea of fixing civil service. What's the matter with it now?
It doesn't work very well, is the basic problem, Tom. I'm an old HR guy. I've classified jobs. I've done federal recruiting when I was still in government. And I talk to many managers, HR folks, and our pay and our classification system, dates back to 1949 when I was a little kid. And it was developed at a time when most of the government workforce was clerical, at lower grade levels, doing fairly routine work. And the world has changed dramatically since then, and the market for talent has changed dramatically. But the way we classify jobs, the way we pay jobs has not changed, and it's causing problems. We have these 15 grade levels, which, were put into law in 1949, which really don't have any bearing to reality right now. We have grade that is, pay linked to those grade levels, which is fairly rigid in terms of what you can offer somebody as a starting salary. The biggest problem, Tom, is that the pay and classification system is not based in the realities of the market. When we testified before Congress a few years ago on whether federal employees were overpaid or underpaid or paid just about right compared to their counterparts in the private sector, the answer was yes. You find, I think in many cases, we underpay. I know some people don't believe that, but when you look at what talent really cost, good talent, we underpay a lot of people compared to the marketplace. In some cases, in some areas, we overpay, and every now and then we get it just about right, so the Goldilocks syndrome. But we really have to have a more modern and more agile pay and classification system for today's world.
I do want to mention that listeners can find your whole proposal with a link at federalnewsradio.com. There's a lot of coverage already up there. But you got some pushback right away from some of the leading federal labor unions who were saying, our solution isn't a new pay system. It's not cutting the budget and not tying agencies' hands fiscally. Why release this during tough budget times? Do you think that that's a hindrance, or do you think that's somehow going to propel movement in this area?
Well, Emily, this is, we released this report. We called it a civil service framework, not a blueprint. The difference is, a blueprint is a detailed set of plans. Here's how exactly you build it, and here's how you re-put the wiring and all that. This is a framework. I think we've got to start the dialogue at some point. And in a way, really, it's not about cutting salaries or trying to extract more money from federal employees. It's really about taking the money that is there and using it more wisely. To be able to attract and reward great talent, which is most of the federal workforce. I know what we've talked. I talked with my union friends, and I understand that part of their concern, and I appreciate the concern, is that if you open up this this area, it could be you could end up worse off. We could get a bad law passed as opposed to a better law. But we're going to try very hard at the partnership to avoid that. And I think the ideas that we put forth are not new. We've been talking about reducing the number of grade levels to a smaller number of pay levels for decades, literally. And the reason we've been talking about it for decades is that it's actually a very good idea. It's a reasonable way to classify people and create a more flexible pay system within those levels so that if you're in a high cost of living area and you're looking for, you know, the best cybersecurity folks or scientists or medical folks or you know, even just good HR folks, you want to be able to compete. And right now we don't do that very well. It's not about warm bodies. We get, you know, plenty of warm bodies applying, but it's finding folks who are really best in their field at doing what we need them to do in the different jobs.
We're speaking with John Palguta, the Vice President for Policy at the Partnership for Public Service. And I guess implicit in this whole thing is that, which I guess what we haven't stated directly, is that all of the labor type of jobs have mostly gone from the government. People that used to cook in cafeterias, sweep hallways, mow lawns, most of the fix cars, that's almost completely been outsourced. So everybody, in a sense, is a knowledge worker nowadays.
That is correct. Well over 65% of the workforce. And let me, it's a good reminder, Tom, our proposal does not touch the blue collar, you know, the wage grade employees. It does not touch the clerical pay system. That's still working for the clericals and for the blue collar. This is for the knowledge workers, the 65%+ of the civilian workforce in government that, you know, are the scientists and the engineers and the analysts and what have you. And yeah, and that's what we're trying to recognize. It's a whole different workplace than it was, and a different workforce than it was in 1949.
And I know this is outside the scope of your report, but since you are an expert on this, do you think that the way that blue collar workers are paid and their scale right now, and the white collar workers, is that two tier system working?
Well, the blue collar workforce is paid based on a better comparison of wages paid in the different localities where the jobs are located. It's actually the kind of approach we're trying to put into place for the white collar workers, where it's a market sensitive. We're paying people based on what the market demands for good talent. That is already the way that it works for the blue collar workers. So that's why we're not suggesting changes there.
Right, but by changing the white collar system, in fact, you'd make it more akin to the blue collar one, because I know there have been discrepancies when it comes to locality pay, where one group gets a higher locality pay than another, even though they're basically working in the same facility.
Well, and that is a phenomena for the blue collar workforce, where, you know, it's sometimes difficult to find comparable jobs. So it's not that it's perfect for blue collar, and we would, you know, the data gathering and the comparisons for the white collar, if we change to the type of system we're recommending, would be more sensitive to differences, certainly differences by locality, but also differences by occupation. Even the same locality, you know, engineers make are paid differently than HR people, for example. Right now, if you're a GS-12, doesn't matter what your occupation is in a different locality, you're paid the same. It doesn't make any sense.
I guess we'd all like to live in Palo Alto, I guess, and you know, in some of those golden zones out there. So, how does the partnership envision this getting operationalized in any near term future? I mean, are you aiming it at Congress or at OPM? It seems like Congress is where you got to go first.
I think we've already been briefing congressional staff, and as I said, Tom, this is the start of a dialogue. I don't think we're going to see a new bill drafted and introduced anytime in the next few months. This is a years-long effort, but we thought it was just really important to start the dialogue now, to put a marker down and say, look, we can do better than we're doing now. If anybody's out there saying the federal government personnel system, the way we hire, the way we pay is perfect, I have a disagreement with that. We can do better, and we've got to start somewhere. We've got to start the dialogue now from the partnership's perspective. And down the road, you know, there'll be some regulatory changes that could occur, but fundamentally we have to look at the outdated laws which constrain, you know, the possibilities going forward. We've got to change some of those laws. It's going to take a long time and a lot of dialogue. You have to have the unions involved. We have to have all the other stakeholders involved, but we've got to make movement because we can do better.
John, before we let you go, I understand that you are trying to sell high school students on the idea of government employment. That must be a somewhat of a hard sell. How are you doing and where are you?
I'm at the Belhaven Country Club overlooking the golf course. It's beautiful, a little overcast, but I was just speaking at an event put on by the Alexandria Sunrise Optimist Club. It's an annual award they've been doing for 11 years now, named after Thomas Worsley, a former government employee. And they asked students to, they asked the local high schools to nominate some of their best students. And if I could just do a real quick shout out to Jordan Brown from Hayfield Secondary School, Muhammad Ali from Mount Vernon High School, and Nathan Rahm from Bishop Dennis O'Connell High School. These are three young men who are definitely going to be leaders. I've looked at what they've done already in high school, and I feel like such a schlub compared to them. When I was in high school, I didn't do anything near what they've accomplished. And they're all interested in public service down the road after college. I think you have to start, you know, making some connections, you know, even before college. And this is one way that the Optimist Club tries to do that. And I'm very pleased to help support that.
Well, good for Hayfield. My aunt taught there English for about 25 years.
Great school.
Yeah.
Great school, and they're producing some great students, I'll tell you.
Well, and what do these three want to do in the federal service? I mean, what attracts them? What jobs do they want?
Well, I was just talking to one of the young gentlemen. He's has already been accepted at Georgetown. He's a senior, and that's Nathan Rahm, and he wants to work for the State Department. The other two, one, Muhammad Ali, is you know, he's a budding engineer. He's a National Honor Society, fluent in English, Punjabi, and Urdu. I think there's a number of places in government that will be desperately in need of his kinds of skills and talent. And I think, you know, Jordan Brown is just very open as a junior to going in and making a difference somewhere. And part of my message this morning was, you can make a difference in government. And we are definitely going to need people like these three young men. And we also are going to need a HR and pay system that's going to treat them decently, too.
John Palguda is Vice President for Policy at the Partnership for Public Service. Thanks for joining us, John.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.